This is Frank Weltner welcoming you to The World Today. Thank you for listening to The World Today. And again, my name is Frank Weltner. I am the librarian for Jewwatch, which is the largest archive of Jewish historical documents on the Internet. We in the world today are caught in a great upheaval in which the Zionists have controlled much of our activities worldwide, including banking, government, military, you name it, they have sought to control it. One of their greatest methods of control is to monopolize and control the media. And to do this, they must have freedom of speech and freedom of the press. And they very selfishly guard their freedom of their presses. And their freedom of their presses is basically protected by their private ownership of these different entities, such as the New York Times, the Washington Post, and the major networks. Whenever someone like myself comes forward with a different idea, a different newspaper, a different library of archives that the Jews do not like. For instance, Jewwatch. I mean, let's just be specific. They don't like Jewwatch. They do not like what I have done on the Internet by becoming number one on Google because my archives of Jewish news information is so extensive that thousands and thousands of people come to see this information and to study it every day. On occasion, the Jews will attack my websites. They'll do it with denial of service attacks, by which thousands and thousands of computers all over the world, and especially in Israel, begin in unison to ask for documents from my archive. The number of attacks from individual computers can be quite extensive, registering thousands and thousands of requests every second. When there is an overload like this, the server is unable to serve up page after page of information, at which time the server goes dead, usually turns itself off. Obviously, when this happens, the hosting company begins to lose customers. And so this is why the Jews tend to give DOS attacks to places that they don't like Jewwatch. They begin to write letter campaigns, both by snail mail and by email. They begin to make phone calls to the hosting company, hoping to harass them to the point where the intimidation will get so great and their time will be so wasted that they will be more than happy to dump the account. And this is what happened to me this week in Boca Raton, Florida, where I was hosting with HostGator, which is a very nice web hosting group. There was a very nice man there, Brent Oxley, who was basically intimidated almost to death by the Jews. They terrified him. They called him on December the 30th, according to the Boca Raton News, and he folded immediately and called me and said that I had to remove my particular website from his server because he was getting so much trouble in Boca Raton and so many denial of service attacks. And I think the man was unnerved. I think he was really scared. I'm not sure, but he was very uncomfortable about the situation. Now, to be honest with you, I probably should have told Mr. Oxley that if he took me off his server, I would sue him and whoever was doing this to him for civil rights violations. Now, let me tell you why. The Constitution of the United States guarantees each and every one of us that we shall be able to have freedom of the press and freedom of speech. In fact, I placed on Jewwatch the following comment about Jewwatch transferring a huge archive of Jewish history despite this hate crime that had been committed against me and against you who like to come to Jewwatch to listen to our news, to read our news, and to study Jewish history and Jewish criminality throughout the ages. I wrote that Jewwatch, a scholarly website, survived the hate crimes recently inflicted upon it by Jews in the Boca Raton, Florida area and throughout the world. During the past week, I wrote, the staff of Jewwatch has struggled to find a safe place to upload the huge compendium of facts it has amassed over the past 10 years. The previous hosting company had been bombarded with threats of violence and economic ruin should Jewwatch not be removed from its servers. In addition, a rabid article was published by the Boca Raton News, which the owner of the host server claimed was monitoring his company to make certain that Jewwatch was removed by Friday, January the 6th, 2005. And at approximately 8 p.m. CST, or Central Standard Time, internet connections to Jewwatch were terminated by the hosting company's president and owner. Fortunately, the Grand Archive of historical documents in electronic form, as well as the interface for reaching those files, were safely and successfully transferred from CD-ROMs and hard drives to new servers, which will ensure the continuous safety of the files, as well as their instant access to the internet, no matter what new illegal acts by Jews against Jewwatch wish to perpetrate in their next series of anti-constitutional activities to deny us the right to be heard. Jews and Zionists from all walks of life have considered the Jewwatch archive to be a thorn in their side because it contains facts that they find inconsistent with the way of life which is maintained for them by the controlled news, much of which is owned by Jewish elitists, in an environment of historical darkness concerning Jewish facts which they have come to expect as their due. We were able to find another safe haven for our news articles, which are used by more than 1 million visitors per year. Our scholars will be able to study these documents securely for a time. After that, we shall have to find more servers on which to place our valuable information, which is so needed in this day and age in which Jews are attempting to dominate the world. Jewwatch has been noticed on a regular basis by publications worldwide. People from all nations utilize its archives for study. Jewwatch appears as number one on Google in searches for the word Jew because of its popularity among certain learned circles. According to web stats, people come from as far away as Russia, Estonia, China, Israel, Australia, and hundreds of other nations. The Jews are guilty of a hate crime in attacking Jewwatch. The Constitution of the United States contains a Bill of Rights appended to it, which protects freedom of speech and freedom of press. All citizens, no matter what their views, are guaranteed the right to communicate these views, no matter if they are popular or not. Views that are not popular do not require these guarantees, but views like those contained in the scholarly archive at Jewwatch are unpopular with the Jews who wrote them and published them, thinking no one else would ever find them and read them. Jewwatch has changed the formula of secrecy for these people who wish to hide their actions, their intentions, their crimes, and their genocide in occupied Palestine and in the Soviet Union, which they control from the top and were thereby able to murder 65 million Gentiles, whom they had previously disarmed by their draconian communist laws. That Jewwatch has recovered much of the surviving evidence and printed incriminating documents which prove their ongoing hostilities toward non-Zionists is a remarkable and unlikely accomplishment. Nonetheless, we have done it. This week marks a new beginning. Despite the hate crimes of our enemies, we have survived to live another day in which we can ensure scholars of Jewish history that the forgotten and darkest aspects of Jewish inhumanity to mankind shall be preserved for posterity to see and understand. Jewwatch is now preserved in geographically distant locations, in electronic hard drives, in printed files that can survive electromagnetic attacks that might occur in a nuclear war, on CD-ROMs, inside hundreds of computers worldwide. We ask that our visitors download sections of our archive or order CD-ROM preservation copies to ensure that the Dark Ages, which took place 10 years ago, before the Jewwatch project was launched, when no one could find this important factual information about the Jews in a single place, shall never again be allowed to take place. A very unlikely exhibit occurred in West Palm Beach this week. It was an exhibit that traces the Nazis' treatment of homosexuals under the Holocaust. It was curated by the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum in Washington, which is run mostly by Jewish people, who are very fond of constantly doing whatever they can to promote homosexuality in America. This exhibit is called Nazi Persecution of Homosexuals 1933 to 1945, and it made its first ever visit to a gay and lesbian community center when it arrived at Compass, Inc. on November the 13th. The exhibit will close today, but Tony Plaskas, his executive director, said, "I think it's one of Compass's most significant outreaches to the mainstream community in our organization's history." Plaskas based the estimate of 4,000 people on signatures in the visitor's book, response questionnaires, official receptions, and visits by schools and private organizations. "We had 40 to 50 come through a day easily," Plaskas said. "Not everyone who toured the exhibit filled out a questionnaire," Plaskas noted, "but based on those who answered, quote, 'I am a member of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgendered community,' unquote, he has inferred that about 75% of the visitors have been heterosexual, as though that were a problem." In Florida, Holocaust education is mandated by state law, and Plaskas said classes from Boca Raton, West Boca Raton, Lake Worth, and Forest Hills High School had toured the exhibit, which traces the Nazis' increasingly repressive policies from book burning in the 1930s to the pink triangle badge worn by homosexual prisoners in concentration camps. Among local organizations whose members viewed the exhibit were the Urban League, Anti-Defamation League, and West Palm 100. The Palm Beach County Association of Police Chiefs held its regular breakfast at Compass, a proposal made by Sheriff Rick Bradshaw and unanimously supported by the group. "That was the most inspiring day for me," Plaskas said. "To have State Attorney Barry Krischer and Sheriff Bradshaw stand and talk about the importance of recognizing diversity and making sure that all people feel that law enforcement works for them, it was very inspiring." Well, I find that very, very interesting, because this was in the vicinity of Boca Raton. In fact, I'm going to call this sheriff. I'm going to call him next week, and I'm going to tell him that my diversity was destroyed in his county, and that I would appreciate him to prosecute the people who were responsible, to investigate it, and to get to the bottom of it, because something very, very illegal was done to Jewatch in the same county where he resides. Now, he is so happy to have this gay Nazi exhibit about the Holocaust that the Nazis held against the gay people, and it was probably wrong of the Nazis to do that, but you see, it was wrong also of the Zionist Nazis of Boca Raton, Florida, to go after Jewatch, because we have civil rights too, like the gays who were persecuted by the Nazis of Germany. The Zionist Nazis are persecuting straight and gay and other people who simply wish to read about Jewish history. And for this reason, I'm going to phone down there and ask Mr. Bradshaw exactly why he would not want to pursue this as a hate crime. Because it is totally hateful and totally illegal for organizations and people to try to stifle freedom of speech and freedom of the press, as was done in Boca Raton last week. There's been so much written about the illness of Ariel Sharon since he had his strokes. And riven by violence and factional infighting, according to the Telegraph News, Palestinians were united yesterday in their loathing of the ailing Ariel Sharon. According to the Telegraph, as Mr. Sharon underwent further surgery, there was no sympathy from Palestinians for whom his legacy is anything but the peace, courage, and leadership for which he has been fated since falling ill. For them, the list of his achievements is more brutal and violent. "Sharon is a war criminal, a killer," said Saeed Hamani, who was turned back by Israeli border guards as he tried to enter East Jerusalem to attend Friday prayers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque. "Dogs can pass to Jerusalem, but not us. How can we remember with anything but animosity and hatred?" The separation barrier, which snakes through the West Bank, has choked Palestinians' freedom of movement, is a focus of hatred, and yesterday there was nothing but vitriol for the man who ordered it built. "He mustn't die in hospital," said Faris Astoun, a resident of East Jerusalem. "As he killed so many Palestinians, so must he be killed. He should die violently. It is the unfortunate truth, but most people feel this way." A minority of Palestinians have echoed the concerns of their president, Mahmoud Abbas, however, and tempered their hatred of Mr. Sharon with a pragmatic assessment of his ability to impose some kind of peace. "Sharon is to blame for a lot of Palestinian misery," said Raji Abdul Hamid, 32, who lives in the shadow of the wall, and of the continually expanding Israeli settlement of Maal Adonim near Jerusalem. But despite the house demolitions, killings, arrests, and the wall, his vision is more practical for reaching a peace settlement than other Israeli leaders. Mr. Hamid said a return to power by Benjamin Netanyahu would shatter the process. Militants such as Hamas have greeted Mr. Sharon's health problems with glee. "The Middle East is a much more comfortable place without Sharon," said Hamas spokesman Ghaza Sami Abu Zuri. "He never added anything positive to the region." In Ramallah, Ghassan Khatib, a Palestinian minister, said, quote, "Sharon achieved neither peace nor security for his people or ours. He simply managed to convince the world that avoiding negotiations by imposing a unilateral policy was fair," unquote. Well, I think we all realize that it wasn't fair. And that's the way it goes in the Middle East, and that's the way the Zionists have always been, because you can't steal somebody's property without them protesting. Meanwhile, in Israel once again, Zionists who have benefited from the stealing of Arab lands, from the constant wars against Palestinians, by the incarcerations of Palestinians, and by the settlements, have filed suit in New York City against NatWest Bank. The suit cites financial transfers made to Palestinian community groups in the West Bank and Gaza through NatWest accounts held by a British charity, the Palestinian Relief and Development Fund, which calls itself Interpal. The suit claims that Interpal collected donations using credit card transfers through NatWest Bank, and that NatWest was aware that Interpal had been identified by the State Department as a fundraiser for Hamas. "The suit is without merit," said Mike Keohane, a spokesman for NatWest, which the Royal Bank of Scotland acquired in a 2000 merger. Mr. Keohane, who spoke by phone from Edinburgh, said also that the United Kingdom Charity Commission had conducted two investigations of Interpal in 1996 and 2003 to determine if it had links to Hamas. He said the commission had twice found no evidence of wrongdoing by the charity. The suit arises from sharply differing views in the United States and Europe of the network of community groups and charities that operate in the Palestinian territories. While some authorities in Britain have cleared Interpal of suspicion of aiding violence in Israel, President Bush officially listed the group as a Hamas fundraiser on August 22, 2003. I have to ask myself if this isn't a lot of chutzpah from the Israelis who live in New York, because after all, it was Israel that invaded Palestine starting 100 years ago and continued to take land and to frustrate these people, to violate their civil rights, and to commit genocide against them. So for these Israelis to say that this bank was funding a terrorist organization is to belie the point that Israel itself is a terrorist organization and is, by its actions in taking over occupied Palestine, acting itself as the prime terrorist. Of course, this type of thought process will get nowhere in a nation like the United States, which has abrogated its duty to control itself, but has let its control go to the Jewish and Zionist bankers and media companies, and the people with the money who are willing to bribe our easily bribable congressman and president. If I were to take an educated guess, I would guess what most Jews in New York would think, and that is that with all of the Jews in the federal courts in New York City, this suit might actually win. According to CNS News, the Palestinians may try to test a new Israeli leadership by increasing terrorism. And this according to the former head of Israel's Mossad, or secret service. Ephraim Halevi, the former head of the Mossad, said in a telephone conversation that it is possible that some warped minds on the Palestinian side might be tempted to test the mettle of a new Israeli leadership. It would be a grievous mistake on their part, he said, because Israel would be hard-pressed not to respond. Israel's capabilities go beyond one man, Sharon, said Halevi. We have a very strong defense and security structure in Israel, he noted. Halevi is the former head of Mossad, former head of Israel's National Security Council, and a former security advisor to Prime Minister Ariel Sharon. With Sharon's grave condition deteriorating after a massive stroke, his authority has been transferred to his deputy, Ehud Olmert, who is now assuming the duties of acting prime minister. Sharon was rushed back into surgery because of more bleeding in the brain, and he is not expected to recover his faculties, assuming he even lives through the surgery. Before Sharon's collapse, Israel was already scheduled to hold general elections. Halevi noted that Sharon ordered Israel's withdrawal from the Gaza Strip, which gave the Palestinians the opportunity to take the next step and show they are serious about the peace process. I'm really not certain how to take the words of Mr. Halevi, since he is a Mossad operative and was the head of the Mossad. Trusting him would be like trusting the head of the CIA, the man who is paid to lie to everyone in the United States and around the world. Because these agencies, the Mossad, the M6 in England, these particular organizations were built for the purpose of lying, of creating disinformation so that whatever they say cannot really be believed. It's an interesting thing that although people understand that the FBI, the CIA, the Mossad, the English intelligence all work together, since they're kind of brothers, they spy on each other, and they still shake each other's hand because they realize that they're both a part of the same game, which is to create hegemony over the poor people of this world. The people who might have a few resources, they might have a few windows and doors left in their houses that haven't been mortgaged to a bank. It's their job to make sure that our people can go in there and mortgage these people up so that they have to work the rest of their lives as slaves to the banking order, which keeps America rich because the paper money that the banks use, guess what? It's printed and published in the United States of America. And every dollar going out of here brings goods in here, brings power in here. And that's the name of the game. Printing fake, phony paper money to corrupt people in other countries so that their people will work almost for nothing, producing things that we want, and keeping them from having very many things. It's called making a profit. And Israel, with all of its banking connections and all of its bankers and the Rothschilds who support it, is one of the major reasons that this particular plan of operation works around the world, which is basically an Israeli colony and a banking colony, where we all work so that the bankers can sit back, retired, and count the money that we earn for them. It's interesting that Pat Robertson, who runs the 700 Club, which is usually shown on national television in the afternoons on weekdays, always tends to put his foot in his mouth. Seems that Christians always do that sort of thing, whereas Jews almost never do. I don't know what it is about Christians, but maybe it's because the Christians that we're able to see on these channels, which are owned by the Zionists, are always people who support the Jewish hegemony of the United States and of the world, who call themselves Zionist Christians, people like Pat Robertson, who act the fool sometimes so that as they dance their little jig for the Jew, it makes the Jewish people very, very happy and it makes them feel comfortable because they don't see Christianity, which is so much larger than Judaism, as a threat. Well, Mr. Robertson said recently that that Ariel Sharon's stroke was divine punishment for dividing God's land. The president didn't particularly like this, and his spokesman Trent Duffy said that those comments are wholly inappropriate and offensive and really don't have a place in this or in any other debate. Well, it's really not up to the president or Trent Duffy to decide what a Christian says from his pulpit. And if Mr. Robertson wants to say that, he certainly in America has a right to do so. Now, I'll probably be the only person to say this, but in my opinion, the president and his spokesman are standing on very, very shaky ground to criticize a Christian minister. The courts have ruled for many years now, especially in the last 30 or 40 years, on separation of church and state, which isn't even mentioned in the Constitution, and they rule that you can't discuss religion in schools. I was at the public library the other day, and there was a lady there who was taking decorations off of a so-called holiday tree, and at the base it said Merry Christmas. I said, look at that, it says Merry Christmas. I thought you weren't supposed to do that. And she said, yes, 7 years ago a message went out that we could not say Merry Christmas unless somebody said it to us, and we couldn't have any displays that said Merry Christmas in our library. Which is very, very interesting, since 80%, maybe 90% of the people in America still are Christians. And because of diversity, we are not able to use Merry Christmas. And this is a part of the mistake of tolerance. We have tolerated Jews who came in here, and they have packed our courts with Jews now. And these Zionists don't like Christianity. They feel threatened by it. And so whenever they have a chance in a court of law, they will fight against the displaying of anything Christian in public places. Of course, they will display a menorah now and then. And they say, well, if you display a menorah and maybe a Hindu god, you might be able to put in then a Christian symbol. Well, that's very interesting, because the Jews are only 2% of the country, and what they're saying basically is that the 2% gets an equal placement with 98%, and I don't think that's really fair. I don't think it's fair for people to come into somebody's country as a guest, to settle in and to be tolerated by the vast majority, and then to turn on them viciously and sink their fangs into the back and the throat of the majority and draw blood in the court and say, well, now that you've allowed us in here, and you certainly aren't going to deport us, we are now going to torture you in the court with the thousands and thousands of lawyers and judges that we have, and we're going to have decisions in our favor, and you could just go to hell. We don't care about you. We will not tolerate you. You will tolerate us, and we will tell you. We will tell you what to do. And that's the risk that I see here with having the president tell Pat Robertson what he should say from the pulpit. It's none of the president's business. He may not like it. It might be okay for him to say he disagrees. In fact, he probably shouldn't say anything. He should say absolutely nothing. This is between a religious leader and his flock. And the president has no right to involve himself in that. And I think the president should get lost on this. Most of you I know will disagree with me, but I think that it's ridiculous. Now, the person who wrote this particular CBS AP article went around finding, of course, the usual ministers to support what he wanted to say, which was that it was ridiculous. They made a generalized comment saying that religious leaders denounced Robertson's remarks as, quote, unchristian, unquote. Now, Robertson said on his 700 Club that God considers this land to be his, meaning the land of Israel. You read the Bible, and he says, this is my land, and for any prime minister of Israel who decides he's going to carve it up and give it away, God says, nope, this is mine. Well, at any rate, the article just begins to take Mr. Robertson apart. Mr. Robertson also said that Sharon was dividing God's land, and I would say, woe unto any prime minister that does this, to appease the United States, the European Union, or anybody, he said. The Anti-Defamation League director Abraham Foxman had to open his big mouth, and he called Robertson's remarks unchristian and a perversion of religion, and urged Christian leaders to distance themselves from the broadcaster. Which, of course, they will, because they'll do anything that the Anti-Defamation League wishes. I believe that Christianity is finished because it has become a Zionist Jewish cult, in which in many cases, before they'll even have a prayer in some churches, they have to have a rabbi come in so that they can propagandize the people of America with the idea that Christians are subservient to Jewish people, that Jesus was a Jew, that he was from Israel. etc., 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 which falls into this world domination of Jewry and of Zionism. It's a part of the mythology that you are lesser than the Jewish person, and the Jewish person should naturally rule because God loves him and he doesn't like you. In my religion, it's the other way around. He loves us, but he doesn't really love the Jews too much. Look what he did to them in Germany. Look at how they're being beaten into a pulp constantly everywhere they go, including Israel. At any rate, Pat Robertson, according to Ralph Nias, the president of a particular religious group, said that Pat Robertson leaves us speechless with this insensitivity and arrogance. And this man is in the People for the American Way Foundation. I don't know what People for the American Way Foundation stand for, but can you imagine the arrogance of calling yourself People for the American Way? How in the world would you know that you're for the American Way? Who is it that gives you the right to call yourself that? So Pat Robertson once again has found his way into the headlines, and I think sometimes that he does this on purpose because he realizes if he makes these outlandish statements that he will get a lot of world press. An old-timer I know, Chuck Norman, who I used to work for at WGNU Radio, he used to say, all publicity is good publicity, even bad publicity. Because it puts you before the limelight. It puts your name before people. And now there's probably more people going to the 700 Club than ever before. And the interesting thing is that most people in the world probably don't like Ariel Sharon anyway. I certainly don't. I consider him to be a killer and a war criminal. And he shouldn't have died of a stroke. He should have gone to the world court, and he should have been hanged like Goering and like Goebbels. You know, he should have been put in a dungeon and given very little food until he dieted a bit and suffered. And then he should have been put into a rope and hanged for the 2,000 people that he killed in Lebanon when he was in charge of those cities. This is a very, very dangerous and evil person, and anyone who would respect him would necessarily probably lose a lot of my respect. But the final words, as usual, were spoken by the ADL, which tried to tell a Christian how to think, what to say, and to let him know that, hey, we're the ADL and we've got our eye on you. Well, listen, ADL, this is Jew Watch, and guess what? I have my eye on you. So you better watch out. Whatever you do, I'm going to report. And it's not going to be pleasant because, Mr. ADL, you are not pleasant. You are not pleasant at all. And now an article that I just loved because it's so well written by Anthony Weiss of the Forward, which is the largest Jewish newspaper in the country, which is published, by the way, in New York. And Mr. Weiss writes, after pleading guilty to 3 felony counts of mail fraud, tax evasion, and conspiracy, lobbyist Jack Abramoff walked out of federal court in Washington, D.C. in a black fedora purchased from Bencraft Hatters, a Brooklyn-based haberdasher that caters largely to Orthodox Jews. 2 conservative commentators suggested that Abramoff's hat was intended to make a religious statement. In a posting on the National Review Online, John Poderetst wrote that Abramoff was wearing the black hat of a very Orthodox Jew, while New York Times columnist David Brooks described the hat as a pseudo-Hasidic Hamburg. Implicit in the speculation is that Abramoff, an observant Orthodox Jew, was trying to use his Judaism to counter his negative publicity image. That impression was bolstered by his statement during his plea bargain in the Washington court, which struck a religious tone. Abramoff told the court, I only hope that I can merit forgiveness from the Almighty and from those whom I have wronged or caused to suffer. The hat in question, a Como II fedora made by Borsellino, retails on the Bencraft website for $200. Salesman Asher, who declined to give his last name, told the Forward that Bencraft sells the majority of its hats to religious Jews, but that Abramoff's model is not a particularly religious hat. He said the hats Bencraft sells to religious Jews typically have a bit higher crown and a bigger brim. A sociologist of American Jewry at Queens College, Samuel Heilman, said that the hat Abramoff wore would be more typical for so-called yeshivish Jews. It would be the kind of hat that you might see in Lakewood, New Jersey, the site of a large Orthodox rabbinical college, Heilman said. He speculated that Abramoff might have bought the hat to wear for religious occasions, but saw no reason to think that Abramoff wore it to court for religious reasons. He probably didn't own another hat with a brim. Observers in Washington said Abramoff usually does not wear a black hat, but prefers instead a black yarmulke or no head covering at all. Siegel, like Abramoff, a resident of Silver Spring, Maryland, did note that Abramoff once belonged to the Southeast Hebrew congregation, a black hat shul. And so there you have it. There's more to the story. Very, very well written. Sometimes you can tell a man by his hat, and sometimes you can't. I don't know what to think about Jack Abramoff, except that reading about him and seeing the trouble he's in and the trouble he's getting the president in and the Congress, it's going to be a really fun thing to watch. It's a story that has a lot of traction. It also is a story that involves Jewish people. And when it involves Jewish people, the media loves to cover it because they love to cover their own. Yes, they do. This is why you see in Hollywood all the actors are Jewish. Why? Because the Jews own it. In the banks, a lot of people that work for them are Jews. Why? Because Jews own the banks and they like to hire their own people. But when we who are white try to do the same thing, that's wrong, isn't it? That's the double standard of Judaism, that anything the Jews want to do for themselves, to help themselves, is great. And if you're black and you want to help your tribe, if you're white and you want to help yours, well, it may not be okay. You have to ask a Jew to really find out. When you carve a disreputable country out of a Palestinian hillside, and you own it, and you run occupied Palestine as though it's Israel, a real country, which it really isn't, you then have the possibility of having diplomatic relations with Russia and Turkey and with other people, either close to you or far away. And when Ariel Sharon became ill, suddenly a lot of agreements that he had made during his political career came into question. For instance, Sharon was the initiator of a strategic partnership with the Soviet Union. And he was playing key roles in the dialogue between Russia and Israel and striving for the Israeli-Russian cooperation that he needed so much in the energy sphere. Now, whether or not you know it, in this connection, his main effort was directed toward realization of what's known as the Blue Stream Project. The Blue Stream Project was an oil project. Sharon was aiming at connecting Israel to the Russian-Turkish gas pipeline. Now, the authors of this idea were the then Russian oligarch and Jew Vladimir Gozinski and Avigdor Lieberman, who were then the head of the Israeli Prime Minister's office. Together working, they strengthened cooperation with Russia and Israel and made it possible for Israel not only to end up with its gas dependence on Egypt, but also to become an important transit point on the way to the Russian energy carrier's transportation route to the Southeast Asian and Far East via the port city of Eilat, situated on the Red Sea shore. According to initial valuations voiced in the spring of 1997, worth of the Israeli deal in the Blue Stream framework reached some $2 billion. There's a lot of money there. In the autumn of the same year, Sharon informed about studying of a possibility of Russian oil and hard coal supplies that would come through Israel also. Ariel Sharon was pursuing not only economic but also far-reaching geopolitical goals. Unfortunately, very few of these schemes came to fruition. But the fact that these geopolitical plans, stretching for thousands and thousands of miles, and requiring basically the cooperation of nation-states like Iran, Iraq, and Syria for such a pipeline to even be built, shows that Israel's cooperation with the United States and vice versa, the United States' cooperation with Israel, were vitally important in securing these states through hook or crook, through war, or through corruption or bribery in order to get these pipelines all the way to Israel. Such will probably never happen. Unless, of course, we have a world war, which in many ways it seems they might be working on. And by the way, what's wrong with a war if it helps Israel? You know how I really love and respect the ADL for its truthfulness, how it never does anything to upset me. So today, when I read from the JewishWorldJPost.com that Chavez has been accused of anti-Semitic remarks, I'm of course overjoyed. A Jewish civil rights organization has accused Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez of making anti-Semitic comments during a Christmas Eve speech. The Los Angeles, California-based Simon Wiesenthal Center demanded an apology from Chavez in a statement issued Wednesday saying such remarks have long been used to persecute Jews. Some minorities, descendants of these same ones who crucified Christ, took all of the world's wealth for themselves, Chavez had said on the December 24th speech. In your words, the two central arguments of anti-Semitism emerge. The accusation that Jews killed Jesus and associating them with wealth, the center said in a letter to Chavez. Our center strongly condemns your anti-Semitic declarations. Chavez did not mention the Jewish people explicitly in the speech, which was broadcast on national television. A spokeswoman for the president's office said it had no immediate response to the complaint. During the speech, Chavez also praised Jesus Christ as a revolutionary hero, saying he was the world's first true socialist. The letter was signed by Shimon Samuels, the center's international relations director, and Sergio Witter, a Latin American representative based in Argentina. They said the center would urge the governments of Argentina, Brazil, Paraguay, and Uruguay to freeze the process of incorporating Venezuela into the Mercosur trade bloc unless Chavez makes a public apology. Witter said Thursday that the group had yet to receive a response. He said even if Chavez did not intend to refer to Jews, the possibility for that interpretation was cause for concern. The words of a head of state should be cautious, Witter said. The Jewish rights organization has expressed concerns about other comments by Chavez in the past. Chavez, a fiery speaker who says he is leading Venezuela towards socialism, has said he wants to have good relations with all religious groups. Venezuela's president is known for speaking candidly. On one occasion, he used an epithet in referring to U.S. President George W. Bush, and he once suggested U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice was illiterate, offering to send her materials to learn how to read and write. Chavez's barbs are usually aimed at opposition leaders or U.S. officials, but he has also criticized Latin American leaders, such as Mexican President Vicente Fox and former Ecuadorian President Lucio Gutierrez. So there you have it. The Jewish organization, the Simon Wiesenthal Center, takes it upon itself, not being elected by anyone, not representing really anyone, except themselves. They have a membership, of course, that pays them millions and millions of dollars to insult people. Well, they just insulted somebody. They insulted every person in Venezuela. They insulted a duly elected president who has a right to say anything that he wants. And they also have taken it upon themselves to try to force some countries that Venezuela deals with to punish Venezuela by not having agreements for a trading bloc that would include Venezuela. And if I were the president, if I were Chavez, I would say to the Jews, I'm going to blockade my oil going to any country where you reside. I have the oil. The world needs it. I'm going to restrict my oil so that it only goes to maybe some of the islands around Venezuela. And until you apologize to me, I will punish you and your little whipping boy, the United States, north of me. I would turn this around. I would say, if you're going to do that to me, then I'm going to do this to you. I have enough oil in my reserves, 10 or 20% of the world's reserves, I believe, to punish not only you, but your friends. And I will do so. And I am shutting down my oil right now, and I'm not going to sell it to you. In fact, I'm going to sell this stuff to China or somewhere else for the next 90 days until I hear an apology from the Simon Wiesenthal Center. And secondly, I don't want any Jews to give the Simon Wiesenthal Center any more money, because they have a big, nasty, loud mouth, and they need to be kept quiet. They represent no one. I'm the president. They're nothing. And for them to stand up and threaten the Republic of Venezuela is absolutely absurd. Secondly, I'm going to begin taxing the synagogues here till you apologize. Whatever I would have to do to punish these people, I would do. I would just, you know, use my political power the way they're trying to use their political power to show them exactly, just exactly who is boss. Until these Zionists learn that there is some sort of punishment for their arrogance in going after all these countries, they will continue to go after them and go after them and go after them and go after them. There will be no end to it. Absolutely none. I want to thank you for visiting the world today. It's been a pleasure to speak to you today, and I hope that you will come back tomorrow for more of our materials and more of the news stories that we place in our archive at Jewwatch. Remember that Jewwatch is always out there doing the research for you that will keep you informed about the mass hysteria in the world known as the New Jewish World Order. And I say hysteria because nothing was more hysterical than the people in the Soviet Union when the New World Order of Jewry took over that country, Soviet Union, and began slaughtering people, one after the other, taking them out of their apartments, pulling them out into fields in the middle of the night, and shooting them in the back of their heads with a pistol. Until 65 million Russians were dead from the Jewish menace that ran their country from Moscow to Petrograd. We shall not allow that to occur here in the United States, and we shall never allow it to occur again in Europe. Jewwatch stands as a message and a beacon to the world, the one place where you can go and find out about these atrocities, so that you can try to make sure that they never, ever happen again. Thank you very much, and we will see you tomorrow.